you must not walk around the city. Hugs, high fives, and handshakes, all forbidden.
Having fun might not be on top of the to-do list of Tokyo Olympic athletes. It's Thursday, July 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, Afghanistan could be on the brink of another humanitarian crisis. The U.S. urges ASEAN action on Myanmar. COVID is forcing many Indonesians to care for sick families themselves. You'll hear how various vaccines work on the coronavirus. Japan raises the prospect of crisis in Southeast Asia. All on today's VOA Asia. The Tokyo Olympics don't begin until later this month, but because of the COVID-19 restrictions, some media outlets are already labeling the Games the No Fun Olympics. VOA's Bill Gallo looks at how the pandemic restrictions pose a unique challenge for the Olympic athletes.
Courtney Frerichs will soon face off in Tokyo against some of the world's fastest runners. But like every athlete preparing for the Summer Olympics, her focus is not only on competition. Frerichs, a middle distance runner from the United States, is also spending the final days of training making sure she complies with the elaborate set of pandemic rules.
We've just been trying to reread over the protocols and everything to make sure that we're, you know, checking all of our boxes and getting all the stuff done. And then, you know, on top of that, you know, understanding, you know, what are the rules of contact tracing. And yeah, it's a lot.
Frerichs spoke to VOA in a recent phone call between training sessions in Portland, Oregon. She's quick to point out she understands why the rules are necessary.
It's a pretty serious matter, like that we're still in this, you know, a global pandemic. It certainly adds another level of stress to everything.
The official rules for athletes are laid out in a 70-page playbook, which basically reads like a gigantic bummer. One section warns you should eat alone as much as possible. Another says you must not walk around the city. Hugs, high fives, and handshakes, all forbidden. Alcohol isn't allowed either, unless athletes consume it inside their rooms. Athletes must also submit a detailed activity plan explaining where they will be at every moment of every day. Once an athlete's competitions are done, they must leave Japan within 48 hours.
We come in, we have a job to do, and then I leave. Yeah, I literally like depart the next day.
Since the event is being held in the middle of a global pandemic, some news outlets have labeled it the No Fun or Cursed Olympics.
Yeah, no fun is probably right.
Jack Tarrant is a Tokyo-based freelance journalist covering the event.
Being here 2 weeks before the game starts, there's almost no enthusiasm at all. There's very little fanfare. There's very little visually that you see on the streets, any sort of banners or, you know, welcoming signs for foreign visitors and athletes. It's really very unusual and very, very different to any other Olympic experience that I've had.
Polls suggest most Japanese oppose holding the Games, which were already delayed a year because of the pandemic. Concerns were heightened after a recent surge in COVID-19 infections, prompting a state of emergency in Tokyo. That's a sharp contrast from other Olympics, where celebration is a main component, even for athletes.
It would be the usual time to unwind and meet other athletes and, you know, have a well-deserved celebration after, you know, 4, or in this case 5 years of preparations.
But David Girard, a former Olympic swimmer from New Zealand, says the focus will be on competition.
Anybody who thinks these are going to be the boring Olympics really has got the wrong idea of what the Olympics is all about.
Girard should know. He first competed at the Tokyo Olympics in 1964. This will be his 11th Summer Olympics at which he has competed or attended. He'll work this year on a medical team.
They're not a meeting of people who want to sightsee or shop. They are an accumulation of the world's best athletes who are there to do one thing, and that's perform to the best of their abilities.
But will the rules, and specifically the empty stadiums, mean athletes will lack the fuel needed for spectacular performances? Not necessarily. A year and a half into the pandemic, athletes are now more accustomed to performing without fans, says Frerichs. While she says there will be a missing element, she's looking forward to the mental and physical challenge.
Trying to remember, I guess, all the training days where it was just, you know, you and coach out there and you got the job done.
Frerichs says she's trying to approach the games like a business trip, which isn't how she envisioned things. But like many athletes, she says she's grateful the Olympics are happening at all. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. At least 13 people, including 9 Chinese nationals, were killed Wednesday in a blast targeting a bus in northern Pakistan. Sydney, Australia, to remain under coronavirus lockdown for 2 more weeks. South Korea extends COVID curbs far and wide as new cases spike to a record. First Lady Jill Biden will lead the White House delegation to the Tokyo Olympics. Vietnam to tighten its grip on social media live stream activity. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and at the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The UN Refugee Agency warns Afghanistan is on the brink of another humanitarian crisis as escalating conflict is causing civilian casualties to rise and is driving hundreds of thousands of people to flee their homes in search of safety. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 3.5 million people currently are displaced inside Afghanistan. Among them are an estimated 270,000 who have become newly displaced since the beginning of the year due to worsening security in the country. The UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan reports civilian casualties have risen 29% during the first quarter of this year compared to last. This increase corresponds with the U.S. troop withdrawal from the country. In addition to ongoing fighting, UN Refugee Agency spokesman Baba Baluch says many displaced people report fleeing because of harassment and extortion by armed groups, as well as lack of social services and loss of income due to rising insecurity.
Our concern is if this does not stop, people may be further numbers may be forced to seek safety inside the countries, but there is a potential risk that they may have to seek safety not even in the immediate neighboring countries but beyond as well.
Baluch notes Iran and Pakistan host nearly 90% of more than 2 million registered Afghan refugees. He says the generosity and hospitality of these countries should not be taken for granted, as they have their own problems of development. The Taliban have been rapidly retaking land across Afghanistan as the U.S. troop withdrawal accelerates. On Friday, the rebel group claimed to be in control of 85% of Afghanistan after seizing key border crossings with Iran and Turkmenistan. Baluch says Afghan women are particularly fearful of losing the many gains they have made over the past 20 years if the Taliban come to power.
Women who finally found the space to breathe in Afghanistan, they are anxious, they are worried, and probably they are angry as well. They want peace and stability for their country. They don't want to go back to an era when there's no freedom for them.
Baluch says an examination of casualty figures shows an increasing proportion of women and children are victims of targeted killings. He says women activists and women journalists are at particular risk. The UNHCR is urging the international community to step up support to the government and people of Afghanistan at this critical time. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Former U.S. President George W. Bush agrees with some of those who express alarm at the U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. AP's Rita Foley has the story.
Former President Bush says he thinks the consequences of the U.S. and NATO withdrawal from Afghanistan will be unbelievably bad, to use his words. The war began under President Bush after the 9/11 attacks on the U.S. He said Afghan women are scared, and he says he fears they'll suffer unspeakable harm. The interpreters and others who helped U.S. troops will likely just be left behind, he said, to be slaughtered. And it breaks my heart, said the former president. President Bush spoke to the German broadcaster DW. I'm Rita Foley.
Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, booksellers at Hong Kong's annual book fair are offering a reduced selection of books deemed politically sensitive as they try to avoid violating a sweeping national security law imposed on the city last year. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for your choice of listening to VOA Asia today. I'm Ira Melman. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has urged action on Myanmar in an ASEAN meeting with the nation's envoy. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Blinken has asked his Southeast Asian counterparts to jointly press for an end to violence in Myanmar, its return to a democratic path, and the release of all political prisoners. Myanmar's military-appointed foreign minister attended the video meeting with the top U.S. envoy and Association of Southeast Asian Nations representatives. However, it wasn't immediately clear if Myanmar's representative responded to Blinken's concerns or previous ASEAN demands. The group also discussed their South China Sea territorial disputes with China and surging coronavirus outbreaks around the region. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The latest COVID-19 wave crept up on Myanmar, a country of 53 million people, after the coup against elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Daily protests against the junta, strikes, and violence all hampered the provision of health services. Reuters' Libby Hogan has the story.
Queues for oxygen cylinders in Myanmar are a stark reminder of a worsening COVID-19 crisis there. Myanmar is in the midst of its most serious wave of infections to date, with efforts to manage it hampered by nationwide chaos after the military coup. The junta said it had restricted supplies to individuals to avoid hoarding, rejecting accusations of trying to monopolize them. But some residents who spoke to Reuters said they are choosing to hole up in a room in their home rather than enter a quarantine center, a decision based on mistrust of the military healthcare system. Hospitals were under intense pressure even before the recent outbreak, with some reporting most of their medics had joined the anti-junta civil disobedience movement, striking in response to the military coup. In contrast, the ousted civilian government appeared to have had more success when the pandemic hit last year. People's willingness to submit to testing, tracking, and isolation helped to lower transmission rates. A spokesman for the military authorities said they were doing all they could and appealed for cooperation. One of the responses from the military has been opening military hospitals to the public and to step up services there. On Monday, daily cases topped 5,000 for the first time, more than double the highest figure last year. More than a third of COVID-19 tests were positive, a figure doctors say points to the outbreak being far more widespread than the official testing numbers indicate. Meanwhile, the military government said on Monday that vaccinations would now be stepped up, partly with help from its biggest foreign ally, Russia. Russia is among the few countries that have openly embraced the military government, which has been condemned globally over the coup and the deadly crackdown on pro-democracy protesters.
Libby Hogan reporting. This is VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. China says the withdrawal of U.S. and NATO forces from Afghanistan offers the country a new chance to take its destiny into its own hands. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As the Delta variant spreads in record numbers in Indonesia, hospitals are overwhelmed. The situation that has put Indonesia in the number two spot in COVID cases around the world is forcing many residents to care for sick families themselves. More from VOA's Adian Utama.
This Jakarta resident spent hours in line in front of this refilling station before he finally got oxygen. It is so tough now. I have looked in many places. I have been here since this morning. They're only filling my tank now. Hundreds of people like David flock to this station as hospitals are bursting with more patients than they can handle. Many choose to self-isolate at home in the care of their family. These patients rely heavily on oxygen supplies. In Indonesia, oxygen tanks vary in sizes, from a portable half-liter to 6,000-liter tanks. Prices have gone up sixfold since the new coronavirus wave started here. But this station owner isn't raising his prices. But with demand more than double, he has put limit on how many tanks each customer can fill up. We used to cater to 40 to 60 people a day. Now it's 100 to 150 people. To refill, it's $1.25 per cubic meter, and we limit 5 tanks per customer. Many groups started helping with the shortage. One group of volunteers started Oxygen for People, a program to lend oxygen tanks to residents in dire need in Jakarta and the surrounding city for free. Within days, more than 1,500 people reach out to this group. We started this movement to respond to the situation in the last 2 weeks with the oxygen shortage. Those who need oxygen tanks just need to sign up on Google Form. We have an assessment team who will respond with necessary information and whether we can lend them a tank. Those who get it will have to agree they can only keep it for 7 days. Everything is for free.
Dipinjamkan oksigen atau tidak gitu.
One resident who came to this location in East Jakarta is very grateful for this program. Frankie recently lost his father to COVID and is trying to save another family member at home. I don't want to lose anyone else, so I will do my best. What's difficult is all refill stations are closed. This is so tough. Lives are lost because there's no oxygen. Now I have it, and I hope to give this miracle for my family. The Indonesian government has promised to step up the country's production and distributions of oxygen, as well as arrange for imports of oxygen tanks. For Indra Yoga, Ahadian Utama, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, health authorities in Thailand said Wednesday they'll seek to impose limits on exports of locally produced AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine because the country doesn't have enough for its own needs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, 7 COVID-19 vaccines have received the green light from the World Health Organization so far. And as new variants of the coronavirus evolve, questions arise about how well each vaccine works. It can get confusing. But as VOA's Steve Barragona reports, when it comes to keeping people out of the hospital and the grave, any shot will help.
With the Delta variant surging, reports show even some vaccinated people are getting infected with the COVID-19 virus. But those infections are mostly mild. All the vaccines are still working by the most important measure, experts say.
They're very effective in doing what we want them to do, which is protect people from serious illness and death.
A rash of infections in Israel raised concerns recently that some vaccines are weaker against the Delta variant. But Powderly tells VOA the shots are preventing the worst cases, as a surge in his home state of Missouri is showing.
They are seeing infections just like the Israelis saw in people who are vaccinated, but they're not seeing anybody coming into the hospital. All of their hospitalizations and unfortunately all of their deaths are in people who have not been vaccinated.
Some of the shots are better than others at priming the immune system. The mRNA vaccines from Moderna and Pfizer generally seem to produce the most antibodies, followed by the viral vector vaccines Johnson & Johnson, the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccine, and Russia's Sputnik V. The inactivated virus vaccines from China's Sinovac and Sinopharm are on the lower end of the scale. All of them produce enough antibodies to fight the original strain, but antibody levels start to matter more against the variants, experts say.
Maybe with the slightly less powerful vaccines, which aren't inducing quite such a strong immune response, the Delta agent is starting to break through, still maintaining some protection against the more severe end of disease. But, you know, it's clearly a sort of sliding scale now.
And the Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, J&J, and Sputnik V vaccines all seem to be better than Sinopharm and Sinovac at activating the body's second line of defense, called T cells.
A backup immune response, like a T cell response, are going to provide a better protection against diverse variants, viral variants, than an inactivated vaccine that only induces antibodies.
Still, Fuller says, the Sinopharm and Sinovac shots are much like the annual flu shot. Not perfect, but better than nothing, despite the complaints she hears every year.
I hear somebody gets a vaccine, they say, well, I'm never going to take it again because I got sick anyway. And my response is always this, is that, you know what, you would have been a lot sicker potentially in the hospital if you hadn't gotten the vaccine.
And she says all the shots help slow the spread of the virus, which means fewer chances for dangerous variants to evolve. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Growing military tension around Taiwan, as well as economic and technological rivalry between China and the United States, raises the prospect of crisis in the region as the power balance shifts in China's favor. Japan said that in its annual defense white paper. More from Reuters' Brian Wood.
China fired back at Japan on Tuesday, saying Tokyo was irresponsible for naming Beijing as its top national security concern in its annual defense white paper. China in recent months has increased its military activity around Taiwan, a democratically ruled territory it considers its own, which is not far from Japan's Okinawa Islands. In Japan's defense papers, approved by Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga's government on Tuesday, Tokyo said China was inciting a military crisis in the region. China's foreign ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian rejected Japan's conclusions about what it calls a normal military buildup.
It is extremely wrong and irresponsible to grossly interfere in China's internal affairs. Unreasonable to accuse China of normal national defense construction and military activities and make irresponsible remarks about China's legitimate maritime activities, as well as exaggerating the so-called Chinese threat.
Chinese President Xi Jinping earlier this month pledged to complete reunification and squash independence movements in Taiwan. Meanwhile, Japan has said they would join forces with the United States to defend Taiwan from any invasion, according to local media. In response to Tuesday's white paper, Taiwan's foreign ministry expressed thanks to Japan for its support.
Brian Wood reporting. The death toll and the partial collapse of a budget hotel in China's eastern city of Suzhou on Monday has risen to 17, according to state media. Of the 23 people trapped in the rubble of the CG Kaiwan Hotel in Suzhou, only six survived, according to the media. More than 650 people were involved in the search and rescue operation, which concluded Wednesday morning. The provincial government of Jiangsu has set up a team to conduct an in-depth investigation into what caused the collapse. The hotel opened in 2018 and had 54 rooms, according to online booking sites. The part of the hotel that collapsed was three stories tall. According to some state media reports, the collapse was initially determined to be caused by the property owner's alteration of the hotel structure. A hotel guest who checked out Monday just before the collapse spoke of loud drilling noises and the sound of the shoveling of sand, according to Beijing Youth Daily. The building was shaking, the guest said. Officials from cities in Jiangsu province have since held an emergency meeting on the safety of existing structures and called for tougher inspection and supervision. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Cascayo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.